Good morning. I'm calling this meeting to order. The House Interim Committee on Revenue, it's Monday, January 13th. Thank you for your patience as we were waiting on some technology to straighten itself out, and it did. I anticipate proceeding through the agenda as it was published. A work session first on introduction of committee bills, followed by some informational meetings where the committee will have briefings on several different topics. I hope to get through all of the topics today. If we don't, it's okay. We'll continue our discussion in February. I'm opening a work session now to introduce committee bills. Mr. Allen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So as per the rules, there are three committee bills being introduced, LCs 249, 250, and 251. Do you want me to just walk through each of them? So the first one, LC 249, is the technical fix bill for the corporate activities tax. There are a number of items that have been discussed one way or another. And in the bill, or the draft of the LC as we have, it contains four or five provisions. The first one specifies that taxpayers, when they register with the Department of Revenue, they only have to register once. There was some question as to whether or not that was an annual registration or just a one-time only. And so it will be able, the intent there is one time only, and there's language saying that if a company reorganizes, they may need to re-register, but otherwise it's once. There's also language there pertaining to returns and allowances tied to corporate, tied to commercial activity. And the intent there is that whenever those returns and allowances occur, that's the tax year that they'll be connected to. And we're still looking at the language to make sure it does what the intent is. But so that's the goal for the returns and allowances piece. There is an apportionment piece related to the subtraction, and there are some questions about the best and easiest way, the best way, the easiest way administratively for taxpayers, the Department of Revenue, for that apportionment to occur. This has to do with the subtraction. If the apportionment doesn't occur, then subtraction could outsize the commercial activity. Commercial activity is sourced to the state, whereas the subtraction is based on all activity. And the language that was in the measure that passed in 2019 just referred to a method that basically pointed to the single sales factor. The language that's currently in the draft and is consistent with the Department of Revenue's rules is basically calculating a single commercial activity factor, if you will. And then there is some language there around establishing the penalties for quarterly collections and annual filing. That's in there as well. And then there is another small change tied to vehicle dealers and pulling in vehicle dealers that are outside of the state and are subject to the state's use tax. Mm-hmm. And so those are the technical pieces that are in the draft that's before you right now.
Good. Thank you. Questions about this one?
Do you need a motion?
That would be nice. Yeah, let's do them one at a time. Is that all right?
Sure.
Do you mind?
So, Madam Chair, I would move we introduce LC 249.
Mm-hmm.
249.
Thank you.
Do you have to say dated? Dated a certain date?
Sure. Dated 12/20.
You want me to say that?
December 20th?
Dated December. Which date? 20th?
Yes.
20th, 2019.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? I'd like to add that it's possible there will be another technical fix or two. We continue looking at words. We're trying to make sure everything is going to work right. There may be something. Any objection? Motion passes. First committee bill. Next one, LC 250.
LC-250 deals with connection to the federal policy of qualified opportunity zones. These are a policy that were part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act passed in late December, or in December of 2017. What the bill does, the first part, first several sections of the bill disconnects from that policy effective January 1, 2020. And then the last section are to require LRO to put together a study and consult with various stakeholder groups about a potential partial reconnection in the future.
Thank you. And for those of you who read this and didn't see the word disconnect, and for those of you who are listening and didn't see the word disconnect, it's not part of the language, but that, as Mr. Alanak has explained, that is what the bill does. So I'm sorry that you didn't see the word you might have been hoping for, if that's what you were hoping for.
So, Madam Chair, I would move we introduce LC-250, dated January 8th, 2020.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any objections? Motion passes. Thank you.
And the third LC before you today, LC-251, is a study bill and requires LRO to continue studying tax reform in the state, and it makes some suggestions about how to go about doing that or things to look at.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move we introduce LC-251, dated November 26, 2019.
Thank you. Any discussion? Objections?
Motion passes. We have three committee bills now. Thank you.
Committee bills.
I close the work session. There's no other business on these bills. I'm closing the work session, and I'm opening the informational meeting now. And we're running ahead of schedule. Do we have everyone present for the first informational meeting?
The Department of Revenue is here.
Okay. Good. Let's start with the vehicle privilege tax technical issues.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deanna Mack. I'm with Oregon Department of Revenue, and I'm here to talk to you about a really high level about what the transportation package taxes are. I know you've seen some revenue forecasts related to it, but to understand kind of the policy issues that I brought Exec Culver here to explain, I wanted to talk a little bit about how the tax operates. So in 2017, you guys passed House Bill 2017, which created the vehicle privilege tax. The tax is one half of 1% of the retail sales price of a taxable motor vehicle. The tax is imposed on vehicle dealers for the privilege of selling taxable motor vehicles in Oregon. Dealers may pass this tax on to the taxpayer or their consumer, but the dealer is the one responsible for the tax. A taxable motor vehicle is one that has 7,500 or fewer miles on the odometer, or if it's not equipped with an odometer, it's sold with a manufacturer's certificate or statement of origin. The vehicle must have a gross vehicle weight rating lower than 26,000 pounds or less, and it cannot be registered in Oregon previously unless registered to the dealer for demonstration purposes only. So far, we have about 450 tax accounts. Let's see if I'm on that. Exemptions from the privilege tax if the taxpayer is not an Oregon resident, if the consumption of it or use of it will be primarily outside of Oregon, if it's sold at an auction that's less than 7 days. There's several things. So far, we have distributed about $12 million to the Zero Emission Fund, which was required by statute. The rest of it goes to Connect Oregon to the Connect Oregon Fund for air, water, rail, bicycle, and pedestrian transport. projects. As a companion to the privilege tax, there is the vehicle use tax, which is when someone buys a vehicle outside of Oregon and is the dealer does not collect the tax because they're not subject to Oregon law. So they have to then pay that tax when they register the vehicle in Oregon. So it's the same definition of motor vehicle, the same kind of concept. This is just that mirror kind of component. A very helpful tool was having DMV not being able to title the vehicle prior to proof of tax being paid. This one, the revenues from the use tax actually go to the state highway fund administered by ODOT, which is for constitutional purposes. So far, we have brought in $34.2 million for the first biennium and 14.5, just slightly lower than the initial revenue estimates for both programs, but still pretty close to target. And with that, I'll give the floor to Exan to talk about the policy concerns. If you have any questions about the underlying tax, please let us know.
Exan Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. As with all new tax programs, we continue to find challenges with administration. One of the first things that we have come across in recent months is their ability to share information with Oregon Department of Transportation's Department of Motor Vehicles, otherwise known as ODOT and DMV. While the statute clearly gives us ability to share information related to the use tax because DMV is not allowed to title or register a vehicle without proof that use tax has been paid when it is subject to use tax, we don't have authority to share information regarding the privilege tax. And because DMV is responsible for licensing vehicle dealers that are responsible for paying the privilege tax, we can't share information about those dealers that should be paying the privilege tax. So the question we have for you is, should the agencies have authority to disclose for purposes of carrying out the vehicle privilege tax provisions and administration of vehicle dealer certificate, should we have authority to disclose that information? Okay. A couple other issues that have come up recently. While a dealer may purchase a taxable motor vehicle with a resale certificate certifying that they intend to resell it, they may still register that vehicle to the dealership. This is not a common occurrence, but it has happened. While the taxable vehicle cannot previously have been registered in Oregon to be subject to privilege tax unless it was registered as a dealer demonstrator. So when a vehicle is registered for purposes other than a dealer demonstrator, it is still considered previously registered in Oregon and would not be subject to the privilege tax. The question there is, should the vehicle privilege tax apply when the taxable motor vehicle was previously registered to a dealer for any purpose, not just when it was registered as a dealer demonstrator? And then another question about exemptions is when a dealer is not responsible for privilege tax because they are selling the vehicle to an out-of-state purchaser. That vehicle becomes, if the vehicle is titled in Oregon to the non-resident, it can't be registered to a non-resident, but they can title it here. If they title it here, should it be subject to privilege tax? One issue is if they title it in Oregon, and then they eventually transfer it to their home state as a registration, it appears to not be a new purchase to that customer and would not be subject to tax in either state. Okay. Our last one regards refund of tax collected. In the 2019 session, there was a provision added that requires a dealer to refund privilege tax to the purchaser when that vehicle was returned under Oregon's lemon laws. What was missing is, should the dealer refund that tax only when they collected it from the purchaser, or even if they paid it out of pocket and didn't collect it from the purchaser? So it's a real technical issue. And then lastly, should the dealer be required to refund privilege tax if they collected it in error? We have been auditing this tax program and we have found several instances where, again, it's a new program. There's a lot of confusion. Dealers have been collecting the tax from the purchaser incorrectly. The vehicle wasn't subject to privilege tax. So we do refund to the dealer because it wasn't subject. We shouldn't keep that. But should that dealer then be required to refund that tax they collected from the purchaser if it wasn't technically due? And that concludes our questions for you today.
Some of these things I imagine you've uncovered because it's just a loophole or it's something that statute doesn't address. However, I feel like it's important to ask the question, are there any of those topics that you pointed out to us that a previous committee, like a transportation policy committee, had discussed and chose to go one direction versus another direction? Or these are just things that weren't all of them. They were not anticipated, and we just need to clarify.
Chair Nathanson, these are all new issues.
Chair Nathanson, yes. Ask a question?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. So I was curious about their policy decision to exempt out-of-state residents from paying the tax.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Kenny Geyer, the vehicle privilege tax, there's an exemption for out-of-state purchasers, and that is, I believe, because those purchasers would be subject to the use tax in their own state, whereas our residents are typically exempt from the sales tax in the state that they purchase, but they are subject to Oregon's use tax when they try to register it in Oregon.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I have a little bit of a ways and means question, and if we need to defer it to a future time, I'm good with that. Typically, the Department of Administrative Services works with agencies when they're collaborating or coordinating an activity. How does it work between the Department of Transportation and the Department of Revenue in terms of handling the revenue that is collected? And on those fees, does the Department of Revenue get reimbursed or compensated for its efforts, assisting in this effort? Who gets the cash?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Smith, the Department of Revenue collects all of the tax revenue for both privilege and the use tax, and then Department of Motor Vehicles collects the registration and title fees. For the tax portion, Department of Revenue is allowed to retain 100% of our administrative costs from the tax receipts before we distribute the revenues to the respective agencies receiving that.
And are we doing that?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Other questions? So this is something you are suggesting we could look at to fix.
Is correct.
Is there something in the works that we're going to see?
We have had conversation with legislative council, and because it has to come from a committee, they are aware of the issues and have at least started on looking at potential language, but that request would need to come from the committee.
Okay. And because too, Madam Chair, we have a statutory obligation to bring to you issues, technical issues, right? These are all issues that require a policy choice that we don't feel we should weigh in on one way or the other. So that's why we're asking you the question to decide what the policy should be.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Elenak. We can probably find time to discuss those, whether we do or don't have a bill draft, for example, at a future meeting.
Correct. Once we get into session, the committee can certainly post it on the agenda and discuss that. It might also involve some coordination with the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee about a potential bill.
Yeah.
Chair, I'm just curious about the, because I've never seen this before. Without a bill, can we just make those recommendations? Are we the final stop? I've never seen this before. I'm just curious.
Or the first stop.
I don't know how it works without a bill.
Well, if it doesn't get fixed now, there's always a subsequent legislative session.
But so it does need a bill to be fixed, these questions?
Yes.
It will be statutory changes.
Yep.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would think at your discretion, with the bills we've introduced, those relating clauses are pretty broad.
Yeah.
And we may, with the Transportation Committee and your leadership, be able to get somewhere.
Might be able to address a few of these points, right?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for that observation. We'll probably get back to this. Thank you. That's it. All right, we're ready to move to the next agenda item. Happy New Year. So you'll need to do a little introduction while they're getting set up. What we're talking about.
Chair Neitz and members of the committee, in LC1, we are looking at the modifications of the Universal Service Fund and establishment of a broadband fund and the mechanisms for how that would operate, including changes to the annual rate cap and the Public Utility Commission involvement in that, and some modification of definitions regarding the Universal Service Fund and the services that it applies to.
Okay. Represent-